yesterday, and it was funny because Jeff Hafley was caught unaware when Matt Steinman from The Athletic asked about the ball king. And he was like, how do you know about that? Well, Matt LaFleur said it in a press conference. So that's how we know. So it's out there, Jerry. And we're loving every minute of it. And so this is great. I don't know if it's going to work. I also don't understand exactly what they obviously everybody wants more takeaways. They were fourth in the league last year in takeaways. It's not like they stunk in that department, but they believe right. that they have that they need to, in order to generate even more takeaways, they need to force more fumbles. They forced and recovered 14 fumbles last year. Again, not horrible. But to be the defense that Jeff Hafley wants them to be, they got to do better than that. And so that's what he's harping on and emphasizing. And as Tausch will tell you, in the NFL, you get what you emphasize, and then you also get what you tolerate on the negative side. And so this is what they are emphasizing. To the point of, and Jeff talked a lot about, you know, how they're talking about attacking the football. And then that led to him announcing that Wendell Davis, their quality controls coach on the defensive side of the ball, his name has officially been changed in the building. He is now the ball king. And so every day at the start of their meeting on the defensive side, I think that's what Matt's or what Jeff Hafley said, the defensive meeting, the unit meeting, Wendell Davis, ball king, we're supposed to call him BK for short, is up at the front of the room, and he's got a video presentation from the previous practice in which they go through plays where guys forced fumbles, plays where guys had a chance to take a peanut punch in honor of Peanut Tillman and knock the ball out and didn't, missed opportunities, times where guys maybe gave half-hearted efforts and it didn't result in a fumble. And Matt LaFleur revealed this stuff during the same conversation in which he said that Tucker Kraft needs to do a better job of keeping the ball security. And then
right.
Tucker Kraft said that that's what they call a bus fine because he threw him under the bus. Not sure coaches are subject to bus fines, but maybe players should be. But be that as it may, it was really interesting. And what I wanted, and look, and I'm sure there'll be those in the YouTube comments or on Twitter. I think of myself a storyteller first. And one of the pieces of being a good storyteller is giving people stuff that they can't otherwise get, right? I mean, you talk about that with your students, I'm sure, all the time. And so I want to be able to take you into that meeting room. And they're not going to let me sit in on a meeting. So it's my job to find other ways to get that kind of stuff to share with our readers and our listeners. And so I asked Hafley, since it's out there anyway, what are these meetings like? How do they work? And he gave a great response that took us into the inner sanctum of a Packers meeting. Here is that exchange from yesterday.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to understand the ball king presentation. He gets up there every day. Matt said, right? So
yes.
Are you showing clips of guys doing it right? What is the presentation since Matt gave away?
All right, we'll go into the ball king presentation. This might take a little bit, but that's okay. Today's a player's off day. So I start off every unit meeting like this, right? And I usually go over a bunch of clips, good, bad, what I like, what I didn't like. I try to correct stuff, I install, but I let him start the meeting because the ball is the most important thing. All right, we've picked teams. He puts the charts up there. He shows the teams. So we'll tally stuff. I don't want to give away all the secrets, but we'll tally stuff that happens. You get minuses, right? So we hold him accountable, and we, like, have a game within the game. So he gets up there, and he'll show the point system. He's got a unique siren now built into the ceiling that every time we get a turnover, he hits a button, and the siren blares, right? So we want to sound the siren as much as we can. But then he has fun with it. You know, he'll show some video clips, some fun videos, but it always comes back to different ways to teach how to attack the football, how are we going to respond when we get an interception, the ball's on the ground, how we're going to scoop it. He'll call guys out who were in position to take a punch and they didn't. He'll call guys out who we don't think took a real punch, took a not very aggressive punch. But it's stuff that the guys are having fun with, but they're starting to, they're starting to swing and they're starting to run out of the stacks. And that's what I'm most proud of right now. It's the effort that the guys have. But, you know, he, like I said, he's done a good job of emphasizing that to start. We got an award we give out each week for it, which every team around the league is going to do it. I just think he's taking it to another step.
So I think my favorite part was when he was explaining it and talked about this siren that they've put in the room. And it blares when they have a good play. Like, John, I understand this is the NFL and this is a business and it's about winning and losing, but it's also about figuring out ways to motivate and connect with your players. And I don't know about you, but this sounds like a really smart way to go about it. I don't know if they're going to have more fumbles or not. I don't know if they're going to have more takeaways or not. But the ball king concept, couldn't love it more.
Well, his enthusiasm for the project shows through, right? He just oozes out of it. And so he must feel like he's onto something. And you can tell just by what he's that he must be getting some if not results yet, reaction to it for sure. Mm-hmm. That clearly it's resonating in the room with those guys, or he would not be that willing to talk and that effusive about it. You know, the energy of it all was you could tell. It wasn't one of these things where, it's just a thing. Don't worry. It's the thing we do with guys, right? Like, he took great pride in what he was discussing, which tells me that their guys are at least responding to it in the room. If they can respond to it between the sidelines and the goal lines, then it'll be even better. But, it does sound something. You're right there. You got to find new ways to preach the same message and get it through. And then just the title is so wonderfully ridiculous. It can't help but, you can't help but draw the guy's attention to it. He's the ball king. Like, that's, it's amazing. And I do like his thing about the ball is the most important thing. John Chaney, the old coach at Temple, God rest his soul, that was always saying when he tried to preach guys about turnovers. He's like, it's called basketball. The whole game is named after the ball. So that should tell you how important the thing is. It's called football. That's how important the thing is. And so you should protect it with that. They don't just call it, passing or running. It's called football. So that tells you what is valued in the game.
I'm not sure if John Chaney has gotten as much credit for saying that as I'll kill you when he went into that press conference and went after Calipari, Cal. Right?
Yeah, went after Cal. Yeah. Yeah,
all right,
there was
I have a question for John about this defense because we spent a lot of time on Green Bay game day when you would join us. When I look back on what this defense did last season, I'm fascinated by what the next step might be. So I want to get into that with John coming up before we head down to practice. Before we do that, time to remind you again about Gruble Offices. And I always say, I hope you never have to make the call. One call, that's all. We talk about it all the time. But I hope you never have to make the call. Look, Paula and Maddie are fine. They had a little bit of whiplash when they got rear-ended in Madison. But it was I didn't know what to do. Do I need to go send them to the hospital? What do I do with insurance? All those kinds of things. And then obviously, is there litigation to be had here? Well, we didn't go that direction, obviously. But that's the great thing about Gruble Offices. They know all the answers. They've been through this thousands upon thousands of times. And they're one call away. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. Or go to the website, Gruber-law.com, Gruber Law Offices, one call. That's all. We will get to the Packers defense some more next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio. We'll be right back.
We roll on with John Anderson, our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. I do have one request of you. I don't want to ask for much because you've been a good friend and I wear my Mizzou hoodie with pride and my two sizes too small t-shirt that I love. Sydney loves it as a nightshirt, though, so it's worked out great.
Well, there you go. We're getting used to it.
There's some specifics to that shirt that I don't want out there, but it's awesome. And so my my question is this. When you, having come up through as a Packers fan, like, what is your, like, for me, you know, it's Lofton and Jefferson and Dickey, right? Because that was, like, I was born in 72, so, like, that those early 80s teams were my formative years as a fan. Given that you're so significantly older than me by seven years,
big I'm age curious. Difference, yeah.
Yeah, huge, big gap. I'm curious, like, what do you hang your childhood nostalgia hat on as a Packers fan?
So I still, the two guys that I really, really liked as a kid when I first was old enough to remember were John Brockington, great Ohio State running back, who was the first NFL running back ever to have three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons to start a career. That kind of got blown by, I think it was Tony Dorsett, and then I think, what is it, Barry Sanders had 10 or around, so he was in. And then I was crushed when they traded away Willie Buchanan. 28 was really
to the Chargers.
And he, yeah, and you know, he'd gone to San Diego State, so they kind of sent him back home. And but he was in a secondary at a time that they weren't great. He was kind of the bell cow of that. And I can name the rest of the guys, right? They had Clarence Big Cat Williams and Mike McCoy and Eldon Roche and Jim Carter and Freddie Carr, who was a linebacker. Like yesterday, I played golf yesterday, 2 days ago, whatever it was, with my son. And we had car number 53. And I'm like, ooh, we got Freddie Carr, 53, the only car that hits like a truck. And then you had Willie in the backside along with Jim Hill was there and Steve Luke and Al Matthews. And Al Matthews, I can remember when he got drafted, he was 29, when he got picked in the expansion draft by the Seattle Seahawks. Right. Like, so those were all the guys I knew, and they weren't great. Right. And then I think when Al left is when Johnny Gray came in and took over for him. But offensively, and they got MacArthur Lane, they came in pretty well. They always struggled at quarterback because Taggy wasn't, when they drafted him, he wasn't there. Scott Hunter was the guy that helped win the division, but he wasn't great. And they went through all this stuff. They had Jim Del Gazo for a while. I don't remember that guy.
Remember the
he
name?
Was actually on the, he was on the Dolphins undefeated 72 team. And they traded a second-round draft pick for him. He may have started a game or two. And so those were the guys that I remember a lot. That, you know, when you're a kid, those were the guys that were 10 feet tall to me. And you could meet – I don't care. Like Charles Woodson, right, one of the all-time great Packers. And he worked with us for a time. And so I'd see Charles Woodson, I'd say hi, and he knew I was in Green Bay. But it's not the same as like the first time I met Willie Buchanan, because there's something about meeting those guys that suddenly you're not. When I met Willie, I was probably 35, but I felt like I was 7 years old again, right? It's kind of like the difference between interviewing or saying hi to Tiger Woods as opposed to Jack Nicklaus, right? One, you're just like, okay, I get Tiger's famous and he's really good, but whatever that is, he kind of grew up when I was in the business and Jack Nicklaus was, you know, this guy. So those were the guys that back in the day that I love. I wish they had played more or won more. And then it was just different because you didn't see them as office. It wasn't as obsequious. You know, they weren't just everywhere all the time. And I can remember, so I lived in Green Bay. I love telling this story. During the old blackout rules, early 70s, right? When it didn't matter if you sold it out 72 hours in advance, the game was never shown in the local market. So we'd sit there in our front yard, or a lot of times we could get up, by the way, our house was, we could just jump up on the roof and we'd sit there and listen to the game on the radio. And then if there was a great play, you counted to three, and that's how long it took for the sound and the roar from Lambeau Field to get to our house. It was great physics lessons. imagine you could count it in some, you know, crazy Ray Greisinger, my physics teacher at Southwest, would tell you exactly, you could figure out the speed of sound by listening to it. But I can, and the one, the loudest groan ever, was, the loudest reaction was when they played the Raiders. And that was when Jack Tatum had the longest fumble return in NFL history. And it still might be tied for that. It was close. And they had a little option pass or option play, and it bounced off, I think it was Mac Lane, and he scoops up in the end zone and goes the other way. So we're listening on the radio, and you're just like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. And like, I'm 7 years old, eight. You know, this is what is more crushing when you're seven than giving up, you know, a touchdown when you're going in for a score. And you waited, and all of a sudden, you know, one, two, three, and then just this unbelievable groan. It was like all the air had been sucked out of Green Bay proper, at least on the west side. Because, as you know, I grew up on the hardscrabble streets of the west side.
Indeed.
Yeah, where there was no drinking allowed, I think, right? The west side, I think, was the one that used to be dry. It was dry for the longest time. And then the east side was the only place you could get liquor.
So here's why I asked this question. As much as Jesse wants to talk about alcohol consumption right now, both for your childhood and mine, generally speaking, their defenses sucked. And quite frankly,
well, John Anderson was standing.
Of course, yes, the other John Anderson is just like the other Mark Murphy. But, like, we know obviously that in 2010 when they won the Super Bowl, Dom Capers' defense was really good. But, you know, Homer harps on this all the time, and he's right to do so. I mean, defensively, they just have not been, for everything this organization has accomplished, their defenses have not been very good, period. Like, you had the Fritz Schirmer defenses, and then Mike Sherman had trouble, you know, the 4th and 26, all that. Mike McCarthy never had great defenses, started out with 3 years with because he couldn't get Jim Bates to stay after Jim Bates didn't get the head coaching job. He had a guy named Bob Sanders who was overmatched. Then he got Dom. They had success. And then Dom had a bunch of years where it wasn't so good. 14, it was good again. And then they obviously did what they did in Seattle. Like, there's just it's been rare for them to be genuinely good on defense. Last year, even with their issues with a pass rush, they were top 10 or top 5 in scoring and yardage. I think they were 5th in yardage, 6th in scoring. They were 4th in takeaways. They were 8th in sacks, which I don't know how that's even possible, given how bad their front four was. I think there's a chance they could be really, really, really good. Like not necessarily like Baltimore Ravens of 2000 good, but pretty damn good. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, for those of us that have either covered teams that haven't been defensively very good or, frankly, grown up with Packers teams, how different are things if they actually have a really good defense? How does that change everything for everyone else, including the quarterback, who obviously has to play better as well?
Right. I think it's a huge difference maker. And now you sound like a cliche with defense wins championships. But, you know, you look at the teams that, I get where the points are scored, but like you shut out the Saints, who are starting Rattler, who's not even a good G League quarterback or whatever they have, XFL or whatever it is. You know, they held Indianapolis to 10. Okay, well, Anthony Richard has shown that he can play every he looks like he could play every position on the field except for the one he's employed to play. And then when played Philly, it's 29, or they give up 34. And the Vikings, they give up 31. I'm looking at it now. So some of those times, Detroit, they give up 34. So some of those numbers, right? It's the old thing. We can make the stats say whatever you want them to say.
Yeah.
So 8th overall is great, but go look at the teams they lost to and then the points they gave up, and then that becomes troubling. But if they can be salty and if they can hold teams down, and you're right, I don't know that you can be the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens. By the way, Ray Lewis, the 85 Bears are a better defense than the 2000 Ravens. But anyway, I say that again from a safe difference from Ray, like he's going to be punch me in the face, but
or worse,
But yeah, just remember he was not he was prosecuted, but he says he was persecuted. There's two different things. So if they could do that, and I do, this is my worry every time I watch football, but it's especially telling with the Packers. How many times do you sit there in third down and go, just get them off the field, just get them off the field. And that's a problem. So just get them off the field, or worse yet, did you get the stop you needed? And I didn't, for all the stats, I think there was too many of that. There were too many times we're like, oh, we could really stand to get them off the field here. And even if they eventually did, you flip field position, right? You went from a plus situation suddenly now, okay, they get into Packer territory and they punch you down to the 10, where it'd be like, hey, they're on their 10. Could we just get them to kick it from the 17? So I think that was an Achilles heel. And then again, there were times when you absolutely needed a stop and you're like, did you get that stop at a really key point in the game? And I think those are much like they talk about quarterbacks make their money on what, red zone and third downs, you know, a lot to be said for the defense. And I think that's where we should measure if this team is better on defense and if they're going to be stout enough to be a championship defense.
So, and I think it's a great point because one of the things Tausch said about figuring out what this team is going to be, and I used it in a question to Goody or LaFleur, maybe both, is who are the guys going to be when it's third and seven on both sides of the ball, right? Who are the pass rushers going to be? How are they going to align their corners? You know, is Edger and Cooper going to be with Quay Walker? Are they going to put Isaiah Simmons in the mix? They seem excited about what he can do. On offense, who are the wide receivers? Are they going to go two tight ends or are they going to go three wide? Like, what are they going to do in those situations? And then are those guys going to deliver or not? And I look at, you know, it starts with the quarterback, but it certainly doesn't end with him. So it's a really good point by you.
It goes to complementary football, right? Look at that very first game last year in Brazil. That was pre-tariffs, so I don't know if the score would be different now, if they would have scored 50% more or 50% less. I forget exactly how – it depends on which side, how you do the math.
Hard to follow.
But they get those couple of early turnovers, but they turn them into field goals instead of touchdowns, right? Like,
right.
Those are things too. Like when the defense hands you that, when they give you that, then okay, we can't just go, you know, thanks, we'll be favorable. Like you got to really – put your foot down and go, okay, let's put this out early. So like in some of those games with the Packers, the Viking game, right? Like let's just take it away from them right away. And so the defense gave them opportunity sometimes. And that's where the offense also has to make good on, you know, the back half of that. It's not all strictly defense. Cause I know complimentary football is a great buzzword now that's going on. That's a great phrase. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves that. But there's something to be said for that, right? That was dreadful against Philadelphia. You're like, oh, that's going to bite us. And you just know that's going to bite him. And lo and behold, most often it does. It's kind of like letting the guy, you know, when the leadoff runner gets on, he usually scores. And when you start, you know, kicking threes, then it's just trouble. Like we have, have you heard of them? You know, the Stableford scoring system in golf, you've heard of that?
I am familiar with it. I don't ask me to try and keep track of
that's
your score
fine.
With your guys so, at Whistling Straits using it.
One of our great producers on SportsCenter, John Totten, we've come up with the modified Totten scoring system too, that you cannot, none of your field goals count until you've scored a touchdown. So you kick one, it's there, but we put it in the bank. And if you score a touchdown, then you can have the 3 points back. But you can't just win a game 12-0 by kicking field goals. Yeah, so the whole design is a bit more than that. But the idea is there are too many people kicking field goals and they're too easy to make. And so now no field goal counts until you get your first touchdown. And then you can start applying kicks.
Jesse,
I haven't brought the Tagle boot juice yet, but we'll see if I can get it to the rules committee.
I think Jason just dismissed it very easily.
No, I was looking at the clock. It's the same thing that Tausch does. It's when I do that, it's, oh, you weren't interested or you didn't want to be part of that. No,
yep.
It's 10:44, and this is still the segment that normally ends at 10:30, and I got to get to practice. So without further ado, it's time for trivia. Jesse, what's today's category and which caller are you and John seeking as I head down to practice?
Missouri loves company is today's trivia category. That was pretty good. Questions very about clever. Missouri, specifically the University of, with John Missouri? As a... I want to emphasize Missouri because I'm not saying Missouri. Missouri. Caller 15 sounds good today. Give people a chance. Caller 15.
Caller 15, 844-770-3776, 844-770-3776. Caller 15 plays trivia presented by Vortex Golf with John Anderson and Jesse Nelson. That's
next. I hope we know the answer to these, Jesse.
You've got question two. You got 5 minutes to find it.
50-50 with him. Yeah. They'll play next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
When you tell me I'm a wreck, you say that I'm a mess. How could you expect anything less?
Wildy and Tausch back with you. Jesse and John Anderson for the time being as Jason Wildy heads down to the sidelines of Packers training camp practice. Share his insights and observations coming up here just a little bit. Jason Wildy live in Green Bay as the Packers get back to practice here this afternoon. The third padded practice of 2025 training camp. So we're holding it down while Jason gets situated. And it is our pleasure to have another first-time contestant for Wildy and Tausch Trivia, which is presented by Vortex Golf.
Wildy and Tausch Trivia is brought to you by Vortex Golf. Rangefinders you can bet on.
It's a big deal, John, when we have a first-time contestant around these parts. We love bringing in new people to try and play all the time.
Yeah, you need fresh blood. You don't want the guy that's just sitting there waiting to call every time when he comes through.
We like them, too. We like the wily old veterans. But in this case, we are really excited, and Jason's going to be disappointed for the second time this week. He's missing out on a first-time contestant. John in Lake Geneva is on with Jesse and John for Wildy and Tausch Trivia, presented by Vortex Golf. John, how you doing?
Doing well. How's everyone doing today there?
Oh, we are wonderful. John, Jason always asks, is this your first time trying to call in for trivia, or have you tried many times and you are finally off the schneid?
Never. Literally my first time trying to call today.
Wow.
Long-term listener, first-time caller.
Wow. Timed it up perfectly.
I guess I got lucky.
Yeah, I would say. That's amazing. Well played, ball, John. Man. That's awesome.
Great ball.
Okay, so you've got one entry into our drawing, which we will either do with Jim, Matt, and Molly tomorrow, or we're going to do it on Monday, or actually we're at a golf outing Monday, so who knows when we're going to do this drawing for the Vortex swag bag, but we will do the drawing at some point coming up here in the next few days. Missouri Loves Company is today's trivia category, catered to our special guest cousin sub of the day, John Anderson. I will ask question number one, and it is this. In which city, John, is the University of Missouri located? Here's a hint. It shares its name with another state's capital city. Is the University of Missouri located in Columbia, Trenton, or Oklahoma City?
Trenton.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Oh, no. Oh.
Oh, we look like we're New Jersey or Delaware. There's all kinds of them.
It was Oklahoma City. No, it was Columbia, Missouri is where the University of Missouri is located. John, all right. John Anderson, you have question number two. Maybe John's had a good run of luck here. First time ever calling in, and he plays trivia on his first chance ever trying to get in on the game. Maybe he'll pull off what Tausch always says is one of the very rare instances where he gets the first question wrong, which is perceived to be the easy one, and then gets the next two right. We'll see if that's the case here. John Anderson has question two.
I am going to have to fight through my disappointment both for the city of Columbia, Missouri, and the state capital of South Carolina, Columbia, as well. Question two, which of these quarterbacks, this is cold, mostly known as backups for the majority of their careers, did not play at the University of Missouri? So one of these guys was not a Tiger. Drew Locke, Case Keenum, or Blaine Gabbert?
What do you think, John?
Me, John, or the other John?
Yeah, you, John. This is tricky.
I know the answer.
I think John Anderson knows the answer, but we are asking John in Lake Geneva to answer the question.
Oh. I'm going to guess Blaine Gabbert.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
By the way, I always refer to Blaine Gabbert as he should have been a Hall of Famer. He got such a bad deal with what they did to him in Jacksonville. Otherwise, that guy's in the Hall of Fame.
And Super Bowl champion went out on top with the Kansas City Chiefs a couple of years ago before retiring. So,
yep.
Blaine Gabbert, career backup and one of the best to ever
Case
do it.
Case Keenum played at the University of Houston.
That is correct, yeah.
Non-Missouri quarterback.
Well, John in Lake Geneva, getting the first one wrong and the second two right is only rarer to getting the first two wrong and getting the final question right. I don't know if we've ever had that, so let's see if we can do a Wildy and Tausch first here for trivia presented by Vortex Golf. You got a chance at question number three. Since 2004, I'm going to ask this one so John Anderson doesn't have to refer to Kansas by any of the very mean nicknames that he's provided
it,
for them.
By the way, you spelled it wrong in the question.
I'm not going to ask you how to spell it because I think that's still an FCC violation, depending on what you say. Since 2004, rivalry games played between Kansas and Missouri, most notably in football and men's basketball, have been branded by which of these names? This is according to the Wikipedia page for the rivalry. Is it the Border Showdown, the Apple Cup, or the Bedlam Series?
You can do
it.
I'm
going to guess Border Showdown.
Border
there
Showdown is correct. And a very rare get the first two wrong, get the third one right for John in Lake Geneva. The Border Showdown. John in Lake Geneva, just for fun, just to show off. No extra entries here. Do you know who plays the Apple Cup?
No, I do not.
That's Washington and Washington State. And do you know who plays the Bedlam Series?
No, I do not.
John Anderson knows that one, I know. You knew both of these, right?
That is Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. I even know who plays for the old Oak and Bucket.
There's some of the Big Ten ones. I went down the rabbit hole as I was trying to come up with some answers for this. And, the old Oak and Bucket, I didn't know they called Nebraska, Iowa. The Heroes Series is now what they call that, apparently, the Heroes game.
Yeah, they changed that. They used to call it, like, Cornageddon or something like that because of all that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the great one. The Civil War is in Oregon State.
Yeah.
The Holy War is Utah and BYU. I love it. There's tons of them.
A lot of fun ones. Anyway.
Backyard Brawl is West Virginia and Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah. John in Lake Geneva, you got one of the three questions right. That means you have two of the possible four entries for whenever the heck we do that drawing for the Vortex swag bag presented by Vortex Golf. Thanks for playing. Thanks for being a first-time contestant. And even as lucky as you were today, maybe you'll have better fortunes next time.
Well, thanks for having me and look forward to listening to you all again. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, brother.
John in Lake Geneva, today's contestant for Wildy and Tausch Trivia presented by Vortex Golf. Jesse Nelson and John Anderson for the time being, but Jason Wildy is getting situated up in Green Bay where he will host the remainder of the show live in Green Bay as the Packers take to the field for training camp practice number 3 in pads. We will hear from Jason coming up on the other side of this break, but before we do so, we will hear from Mark Tauscher telling us about the ice-cold, refreshing taste of Coors Light. Stick around, it's Wildy and Tausch.
Mark Tauscher here for the Blue Mountains of cold, refreshing Coors Light. Whether you're tailgating pregame, enjoying your experience during the game, celebrating a big win after the game, or you just need a moment to chill, crack open a Rocky Mountain cold Coors Light. Coors Light is brewed with a 3-step cold process, cold lager, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's actually made to chill. The mountains on Coors Light's cold activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection, which, besides the refreshing taste, is my favorite thing about drinking Coors Light. Refreshingly cold at only 102 calories, Coors Light is made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're on the Packers.
There's a lot of guys that have shown they've belonged.
Because we're on Wisconsin sports.
I don't know if they've shown that they have staying power and that they're really, really good.
Nobody covers the green and gold like 100.5 ESPN.
Hold on. I don't want to know what it's like when you're gone.
Like a bit of a tough go of it at, in trivia there, Husky. So, and two Johns. It's one too many Johns, if you ask me. Hard to keep track of, but you figured it out, and we got the last question right. So at least John in Lake Geneva has that going for him, which is nice. John Anderson is our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Packers practice well underway here. Helmets and shorts for today. But it'll be interesting to see what the tenor of practice is, John, because as we talked about earlier in the show, this whole discussion of physicality and an emphasis on it, I do wonder if going shoulder pads with shorts is an effort to scale back the physical nature. When you're in full pads, you got the football pants on and the pads in your football pants, and you're thinking, hey, this is just like game conditions. Maybe this is way, I don't know. Am I wrong to think that this is Matt LaFleur's way of getting them to still be sort of physical, but not quite as physical as they've been, causing trouble for certain players?
Dialing back a little. What I found strange is in this, and I get that sometimes they get chippy with each other, but it's usually not on day one or two, right? It's usually a couple weeks in the camp where they get tired of each other. And then they have to go to Indianapolis and have, you know, joint practices. That one is that they're after each other this early and being apparently angry with each other and ornery with each other is a bit of a surprise. But yeah, maybe he's trying to dial back. But again, I would think that's odd that if you're trying to build this culture, we gave you 2 days and I'm like, okay, we gotta put the kibosh to this now. Like those would be mixed messages.
It would be, and I would say this too, like my recollections of Mike Holmgren and my longtime mentor, Tom Mulhern, was so good. He, for some reason, he had a knack for predicting when Mount Holmgren would erupt. And he, like, it was before practice. It just, today feels like the day, you know, you could see he was frustrated with some stuff yesterday. And going back to what we were saying about coaches yelling and stuff, like he wasn't a huge, huge yeller. He was certainly willing to yell, but there was always, he would reach that breaking point in camp and then the eruption would come. And Matt LaFleur does not usually do that, but obviously we had that at the last practice with Rashid Walker. The players had the day off yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see what today's practice does look like. And again, they're still wearing their shoulder pads, so there's still going to be some collisioning, if that might be a Tausch word. That's not really a word, but it will not be to the same degree.
I used to think physicality was a word that Kurt Herbstreit made up, but apparently I looked it up. You know, like apparently it was first used in 1827, but for the longest time I thought physicality was just a made-up television word. But
so apparently Corso was the first one to use it.
Whatever it was, I'm like, that can't, I don't think that's really a word, but it turns out it was maybe not used a bunch. And now it's everywhere when it comes to,
I love
what's
the
word.
So
do you have a recollection? I always love to lean on you for your years of experience here. Do you have a camp fight that you just remember where it was just a Donnybrook guys just were separated and just was ugly?
So I don't know if I can recall one where things got really, really bad. Like there's, you know, there are times where it's gone longer than you expected it to. Yeah. So Miles Garrett and Mason Rudolph, is that what it was? Or
right.
Aaron Donald did that in a practice, I think, too. The stories that I remember clearest are the ones when we're in the locker room, when we were in there. So one was a fight and one was an almost fight. The almost fight was when Kabir Baja Biamila confronted a teammate who he knew was having an affair and informed the teammate that he intended to tell said teammate's wife about it if he didn't tell him himself, to which said teammate replied, "If you do that, I am going to gouge your blanket eyes out." And I thought there was going to be a pretty serious fight in the doorway to the showers. Cooler heads prevailed. The other one, Vaughn Booker, was a defensive lineman that they picked up from Cincinnati in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I don't know who the other combatant was. What I do remember is I was standing in that area of the locker room and the fight began and Santana Dotson grabbed me by the shirt and pulled me out of the way right before I would have been just trucked by the two of them getting after it. Like, it's one of my favorite locker room stories, that and the Antonio Freeman demonstrating how to get off press man coverage and grabbing and twisting and pulling my arms and pushing my shoulders while he was wearing nothing but a jock strap. Those are my two top 10 interactions in the locker room.
Were you like Darren Baker and JT Snow just ripped you out of the way?
Yes. Plate. I mean, the way he it was like by the back of the shirt collar, because I had my back to, like, it was going past his locker, and he grabbed me and pulled me into his locker, kind of at a 45 degree angle, and I'm like, what? And of course, you know, Santana, and we all know Gilbert Brown was the gravedigger, but Santana was no small fella. That defensive line in 96 was so good because of him and obviously a certain guy named Reggie White and Sean Jones as well. But he grabbed me, and I can tell you this, he's a strong dude now. I'm sure he's still a strong dude even now in his 50s. But he, I don't know if he saved my life, but he certainly saved me from probably a broken leg or something, because they would have gone right into me. And two 300-pound guys getting after it in the locker room, I'm not going to be able to compete and handle that. So yeah, those are the stories. But no, fights are so few and far between these days. The thing with Rasheed Walker the other day, that felt like kind of a rarity. So it's just not something that back in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm sure Tausch has a fight story or two, but it's been a long time since we saw a big one. But hey, the way this camp is going, we could see it before the end of the show.
So just to confirm, you got stuffed in a locker and you were very thankful for it.
I don't know about stuffed, pulled into. Then they were very wide. So I wasn't like, when you got stuffed into a locker at Muskego High School, it was very cramped, right? Not that you would know how that felt, but others,
pre-Madison weight loss. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Santana, thank you for your service. We'll kick off the 11 o'clock hour with John Anderson, our cousin sub of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. In 2 minutes, it's Wilde and Tausch.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.